Rabbi Winston, you ready on your end?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this. Here we go.
Recording in progress.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our pre-Purim Torah series. My name is Moshe Kurtz. I work here at Congregation Aguda Shalom. I realize I just sit over here, but we're on Zoom, but we're on the shul Zoom account. So I feel like I'm being hosted here in Stanford. But nonetheless, it is my absolute privilege to have my longtime friend and colleague, Rabbi Dov Winston, who will be the third speaker in our series this evening, who will be sharing Torah with us. In a moment, I'll share Rabbi Winston's bio and then hand over the floor to you, Rabbi Winston. Just want to acknowledge the presence of Toby Schaefer, our shul president, as well as Marina Sapir, head of our adult education, who have been so kind and supportive in me making this cross-shul collaboration. And Rabbi Winston, thank you to you and to your community for accepting the invitation. Rabbi Dov Winston, here we go. Rabbi Dov Winston serves as the rabbi of the Young Israel of America on Long Island and as the community programming director for Yeshiva University's Center for the Jewish Future. He received his rabbinic ordination from REITS, holds an MSW from the Wurzweiler School of Social Work, and a bachelor's degree in psychology and Jewish studies from Yeshiva University. Rabbi Winston has also previously served on the rabbinic staff at Baron Hirsch Congregation in Memphis, Tennessee, and at the Young Israel Potomac, Maryland. He and his wife, Rena, have three beautiful daughters, some of whom, he wrote this, I trust that is true, some of whom you might be so lucky to hear in the background while he is giving the shiur, depending on how bedtime went tonight. That is verbatim the bio I received. So maybe we'll be zochet to that. My daughter was just put to sleep, and if you listen carefully, you can hear her crying in the background. So, imo nochi petzara. Rabbi Winston will be speaking on the topic of the mysterious connection between Purim and Shabbos. And as it's almost Purim, and we are always experiencing Shabbos, this is a very timely topic. So without any further ado, Rabbi Winston, if you'll grace us with your Torah.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kurtz. It's really a pleasure to be here, to see new faces, old faces, and it's really exciting to be here this evening. I have to apologize on two accounts. First of all, when I originally said yes to this, I forgot, or I didn't realize, I should say, that Marv in my shul is 30 minutes after 7:30, so I will only have a somewhat shorter period. This evening is 30 minutes to learn together, but God willing, we'll be able to accomplish something. And also, I don't know if I have to apologize for this, but we also have people here in person as well, so I'll be speaking to the screen and also to some of the individuals who are here. Let me just begin by giving you the source sheet. I just sent it in the chat, so you should find the source sheet over there. And so we'll just jump right into it. The reason why I decided to talk about this topic is because Purim and Shabbos are probably the only Jewish holidays or Jewish experiences that you would say have zero connection, right? Everyone knows that every Hanukkah you're going to have at least one Shabbos, every Pesach, every Sukkot. Basically, every Jewish holiday has some element of Shabbos intertwined with it, except for Purim. Purim can never really land on Shabbos. There's something called Purim Meshulash, which we experienced last year, not really applicable, though, this year. And in general, it's never really something that you'll have fully intertwined with Shabbos, and that you don't read the Megillah on Shabbos, you don't really fulfill any of the mitzvos of Purim on Shabbos, and therefore, at first glance, you would find, or you would seem to think, that Purim and Shabbos have nothing to do with one another, until, of course, you take a look at source number one on the source sheet. The first source that we have, of course, comes from our Havdalah, that we say every single Shabbos, every single Motzei Shabbos, rather, and we're just going to try to skim through the sources as best as possible with the limited time that we have, we know this paragraph quite well in source number one. Hinei kel Yeshua siyasach v'lavchad. We go through all these verses that are found in the book of Tehillim, and then we conclude the first introductory paragraph of our Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos with the verse La Yehudim haisaura v'simcha v'sasun v'yikar. So to the untrained mind, they would say, okay, that must just be another verse from the book of Psalms. That's from the book of Tehillim, but it's actually not. It's from the book of Esther. It's from Megillas Esther, and it's actually the only time in our liturgical experience, whether it's davening, whether it's the prayers or like Havdalah and the like, that you find an insertion from the Book of Esther. And the obvious question is, what in the world does Esther have to do with Shabbos? What does Purim have to do with Shabbos? Such that whoever it was who instituted that we would say this verse on during Havdalah, that it's somehow seriously intrinsically connected to our Havdalah experience. So to try to understand this a little bit better, I direct you to look at source number 2. Which I'm just going to sort of mention outside, but feel free to read it inside as well, in Hebrew or the English. It's the verse, is the context that you can find this verse of La'yehudim ha'isa'ura. And basically, this verse comes up towards the end of the Megillah, in which we are told, very simply, that the Jewish people were victorious. It was an amazing experience. God came through for us, and we were managed to come out scot-free. And the Pasuk tells us in the Book of Esther, La'yehudim ha'isa'ura, the Jewish people experienced such excitement, such exuberance, there was happiness, there was joy, and therefore, we clearly see that this verse has to do something with a victory, something to do with an elation that the Jewish people experienced, but we're left kind of wondering what this has to do with Havdalah at all. And if you take a look at source number 3, again, we won't see that inside, but it's the Ramah of Moshe Isserlis, who codifies the halacha for the Ashkenazi Jews, who it looks like most of us are Ashkenazim, although you never know, most of us, when we're saying Havdalah every single week, we'll follow this Ramah, who tells us in source number 3 to include this verse from the Book of Esther. So this is going to have to be our central question. What in the world does this verse have to do with Havdalah? What does it have to do with Shabbos? What does Purim have to do with Shabbos? So we'll begin trying to understand that by taking a look at source number 4. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that you want to understand what the connection between Havdalah and Shabbos is, don't look at this Gemara, because it's not going to tell you. What this Gemara will tell you is what each of these words in this verse actually means. And again, we'll sort of skim through it. So the Gemara tells us in source number 4, La'yehudim ha'isa ora v'simcha v'sasun v'yikar. So Amar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda says, ora zo Torah. Evidently, these four words are descriptors of something that the Jewish people celebrate and experience outside of the normative holiday of Purim. So Ora, the word Ora means Torah. The Jewish people got to experience Torah. Skipping a few words, Simcha, what does it mean that the Jewish people experienced happiness? Ze Yom Tov, the Jewish people got to celebrate Yom Tov, and not just Yom Tov, but also Shabbos, that the Jewish people have the ability to experience a moment or holidays and days of rest in general. That's what it means by simcha. Sason zo mila, another word for happiness, sason, that actually means that the Jewish people celebrated the mitzvah of bris mila, of circumcision. And finally, v'yikar elu tefillin, the word yikar is tefillin, that the Jewish people, evidently from this verse, we infer, our rabbis tell us, that the Jewish people celebrated these four mitzvot specifically towards the end of the Megillah. That they celebrated learning Torah, they celebrated the beauty of Yontif and Shabbos, they experienced the beauty of Bris Milah, of circumcision, and of course they also put on tefillin. And the understanding seems to be that this is all about what Haman was trying to get rid of. When Haman made his evil decree against the Jewish people, he said, you have to realize that you are not going to be able to do these mitzvos anymore. Why? So take a look at source number 5. We have in the Maharsha. Maharsha is famous for many things, but in particular, he is well known for his ability to kind of take what we would call an agadic passage and bring it down to earth in a way that we can actually understand what's going on. So he explains quite simply, and I'll just direct you to the third line over here in the Hebrew. So he explains that all of these mitzvot have one single commonality, and that is, they kind of sound like a random mix. You have Torah, Tefillin, what do they have to do with anything? So he explains that each one of them can sort of be summed up in one or two words, and that is, each of these represent either an os, a sign, or edus, a testimony, that any of these four mitzvos, you will find an element of them that are meant to sort of be a call to action from us, as it were, that we are saying through these mitzvos that we believe in God and that we are the representatives of God in this world. And so he explains, we'll just read it briefly, about Torah, he edus li Yisrael, that the Torah is clearly a testimony for the Jewish people to God. And he explains further, v'yish gam b'mitzvos seh shehim os, the Edus Li Yisrael. There are those mitzvos. Here you go. There are those mitzvot that are considered a testimony and a sign as if we are serving God. And the three mitzvot are Shabbos, Tefillin, and Milah. So Shabbos, which we will assume for now is sort of synonymous with Yontif, with Yom Tov, as the Gemara explained. So these three mitzvot, Shabbos, Tefillin, and Milah, are all meant to be a sign that we are serving God in this world. V'lakach, and therefore, says the Maharsha, Gazar Haman al Eli. Haman said we have to eradicate these commandments. Learning Torah, circumcising your sons, wearing tefillin, experiencing the rest and the beauty of Yontif and Shabbos. Haman said we have to get rid of these things because they are the mitzvot that separate the Jewish people more from any other nation. These are sort of the indicators that say this is not the same people, right? We begin the Megillah by saying that there is a nation that is scattered among all of the other countries that Ahasuerus rules over. And these are the four essential commandments that make us different from the rest of these nations. And so Haman says we have to eradicate these people, but before we even eradicate them, we have to make sure that they are not allowed to do these commandments any longer, because if they do them, then they're going to continue to divide themselves from the rest of the nation. And therefore, says the Maharsha, that's what's so significant when we get to the end of the Megillah. When we say that the Jewish people celebrated, they were besimcha, they were in happiness, it's not just that they were happy, they were, you know, having a good cup of wine and dancing around. No, they got to finally re-experience these four commandments that they were not really able to keep for a certain period of time, because Haman said, you can no longer keep them. And so we therefore are able to kind of point to a very interesting understanding as to why it might be that every single Motzei Shabbos at Havdalah, we always mention this verse that is meant to connect us to these four mitzvot that the Jewish people experienced at the end of the Megillah, and that is that very simply, at the conclusion of Shabbos, inevitably, there is a certain sense of sadness that the Talmud tells us that we're supposed to feel. That's why we smell the besamim, the spices, because it's hopefully going to take away a little bit of our depression with the beautiful Shabbos now leaving us. Perhaps we mentioned the verse of La Yehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Yikar to tell us that it's true, Shabbos is leaving, and Shabbos is, of course, such a pivotal day and such an exciting day for the Jewish people that comes once a week. But don't worry, maybe we're saying to ourselves, we also have three other commandments, Milah, Tefillin, and Torah, that we can continue to keep us linked and connected to God throughout the week until we come back to Shabbos. So therefore, very simply, why do we have La Yehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Yikar? Why do we mention this verse at the conclusion or at the conclusion of the introduction of our Havdalah? To help us be not as depressed as we might be at the conclusion of Shabbos, because we have to realize that there are other beautiful mitzvot that can keep us engaged and connected with God. With that said, you can kind of wrap up shop over here and just say that that's the main connection between Shabbos and Purim and call it a day. But the truth is, if you dig a little deeper, there are additional connections that we could find between Purim and Shabbos, and I would like to share a few of them with you and try and understand why it is that our rabbis were almost trying to push something that may or may not actually be there. What would be the reason for all of this? So if you take a look at source number 6, it's the very introduction, the opening chapter of the Book of Esther, in which we meet some of our famous characters or infamous characters that we love to hate, right? We meet Vashti, we meet Ahasuerus, and we're told, we'll read the English of the verse over here in source number 6, on the seventh day when the king was merry with wine, he ordered that all of these people, these are like the Sresim, these were the eunuchs in attendance on King Ahasuerus. She said, go bring Queen Vashti before the king with her crown to show the nations and the rulers her beauty. This is like the most famous and perhaps even misunderstood verse that they teach the children in schools, because we're told that what happens, that Ahasuerus, she said, go get the queen, bring her out naked, and she said, I can't come out naked, I don't want to do this, and then she grew a tail, right? This is like the famous story they tell all the children. And says the Gemara in Megillah, what in the world is going on over here? On the seventh day, Ahasuerus commands all these eunuchs to bring. What is this all about? So if we take a look at source number 7, the Gemara explains as follows. Vashti was punished in this humiliating way, for it is with the measure that a man measures to others that he himself is measured. In other words, God punishes individuals in line with their transgressions, measure for measure. This is a famous idea, mida keneged mida, that God punishes us in the same way that we might have acted wrongly. And so this happened with Vashti. This teaches that the wicked Vashti would take the daughters of Israel, strip them naked, and make them work on Shabbos. Therefore, it was decreed that she be brought before the king naked on Shabbos. So amazingly, says the Gemara, an additional link between Purim and Shabbos. For whatever reason, Vashti had it in her head that she did not want the Jewish people really celebrating Shabbos properly. And what did she do? She did probably one of the most heinous things that you could have done. And she took all the Jewish women and she took them out of their homes on Shabbos. She made them strip naked and she made them work on Shabbos. Many, many disgusting things about that. But number one, and perhaps most important for us to understand, is that Vashti had this clear understanding that Shabbos was a significant day, and she did everything that she could to make that day bad for these Jewish women, and therefore she was punished on Shabbos. There's no Shabbos for Vashti, but on the seventh day of the week, she was punished because of how she treated the Jewish people on Shabbos. Then, of course, there is the Gemara in source number 8, probably one of the more well-known Gemaros that we have regarding the Megillah and something that we know about Esther, and that is that Esther, of course, kept Shabbos. Now, keeping Shabbos is not the easiest thing to do when you're in the palace with Ahasuerus and you don't want anyone to know you're Jewish, and the truth is, I don't know why it was so hard. Like, just get a calendar. How difficult could it possibly have been? Okay, but it was evidently really hard for her to keep Shabbos. You would lose track of time pretty easily. And therefore, says the Gemara in source number 8, that the verse states, and the 7 maids chosen to be given her out of the king's house, Rava said she would have a separate maid attend her each day, and she would count the days of the week by them, so she was always aware when Shabbos was. Evidently, it was so hard to keep track of all the days, so she had a Sunday maid, a Monday maid, etc., and every time that the Saturday maid would come in, she would say, oh, it must be Shabbos now, and therefore, she would have the experience and the ability to celebrate Shabbos. With all of this said, there seem to be these numerous kind of not necessarily clear connections between Purim and Shabbos. We're trying so hard to connect these 2 days when there does not really need to be any connection, right? If we never would have thought for a moment that Purim would be connected to Shabbos, we could have lived fulfilling lives. We never would have thought otherwise. We would have had a beautiful Shabbos this upcoming Shabbos. We would have had a beautiful Purim next week, and we wouldn't have to think about it any further. But our rabbis are kind of pushing us. They're saying, no, you have to realize that there is this inexplicable connection between Purim and Shabbos, and the question, obviously, for us is, what is the significance of that connection, and how can we take that to enrich both our Shabbos and our Purim from this? So if you take a look at sources number 9 and 10, so Rabbi Meir Goldicht, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University, he has a beautiful sefer called Meir Panim, in which he delves into this question on a very deep level. He tries to understand what is this deep connection and significance between Purim and Shabbos. I may have source sheets for you. So what is this deep connection that we find? So take a look at source number 9 first. So Rav Goldwicht writes as follows. We'll read through the Hebrew and we'll translate. He says, "Dehainu Am Yisrael lo shamar mea v'shmonim shabbasos." Evidently, I'm not entirely sure where he gets this from. If anyone knows, please feel free to share. But Rav Goldwicht explains that there's a known idea that the Jewish people, they failed to keep 180 Shabboses, and therefore the keneged yamim elu shel chilul haShabbos kibal haShverosh mea v'shmonim yom shel shalva umishtaus. Right. So evidently, the reason why Achashverosh had this major party that lasted for 180 days was because it was keneged. It was sort of aligned with the fact that Jewish people didn't keep Shabbos for 180 days. Right. The 180 individual Shabbos is equals 180 days, and so Achashverosh had a party for 180 days. Mordechai and Esther understood this very well. So Mordechai and Esther understood that the reason why the Jewish people were experiencing some of the negative elements of the rulership of Ahasuerus and the Haman, that it was all because of this idea that they were not keeping Shabbos properly, that they had failed to keep 180 Shabboses. So Mordechai and Esther made it their job to enhance the Shabbos experience of all of the Jews that were in the town, all of the Jews that were around the 127 provinces of Ahasuerus. And therefore, says Rav Goldwicht as follows. follows. Chazal melamdim otanu. We know that our rabbis teach us. Al malas haShabbos v'segula sa. We know that Shabbos is very special for many reasons, but number one, because Shemira Shabbos bekocha limchol al kol avonosinu ulahatzilinu meyavinu. That Shabbos has the special ability that if we keep it properly, if we use it as like a get out of jail free card, but if that we truly are able to connect to Shabbos on the deepest of levels, that Shabbos has the ability to atone all of our sins for us. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Hamashaver Shabbos Kelchaso. Anyone who keeps Shabbos according to the letter of the law, Afilu Ovid Avodah Zarah. Even if you're an idol worshiper, which is obviously a significant thing to say that an idol worshiper can be atoned, Mochlono, we forgive an idol worshiper if he decides to go back and keep Shabbos. And therefore, says Rav Goldicht, Mishum Kach, Mordechai v'Esther motziim l'nachon l'chazek ba'am Yisrael es inyana u'malasa shel HaShabbos. The underlying theme, says Rav Goldicht, of the entire Megillah, of the entire story of Purim, is actually Mordechai and Esther trying to encourage the Jewish people to have a deeper appreciation for what Shabbos is and what it's all about. They understood that if they could enhance the Shabbos experience for every single Jew in all of the 127 provinces, all of those Jews who were in exile, making their Shabbos a little stronger, a little bit more meaningful, then they would be able to sort of overturn the decree that Haman had brought against them. They would overturn all of the evil that they were experiencing, perhaps even be able to return to the land of Israel and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, says Rav Goldich in source number 10 now, a few pages later in his book, and let's just jump to the third paragraph over there, he says, Mishum Kach, B'chol Motzoi Shabbos B'Havdala. Therefore, every single Saturday night when we say Havdala, Lefi Kol HaMenhagim Omrim, everyone agrees that you say La'ehudim Ha'isa'ura V'Simcha V'Sasun V'Yikar. We say what we understood at the beginning to be some sort of a random verse from Megillas Esther that we throw into our Havdala. Why do we mention it? Because we have to understand what is truly important, what is truly valuable for us. That every single Jewish person has to understand that when it comes down to it at the end of the day, the most important day of the week for us is Shabbos. And we have to sort of recalibrate our minds, right? Many of us get excited for, Monday Night Football or Sunday Netflix. I don't know what people do these days, especially throughout a pandemic. I don't know what anyone does anymore. But if we are not as excited about Shabbos as perhaps we should be, that's the reason why we insert the verse from Megillas Esther in our Havdalah of La'ehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sasun V'Yikar, so that we can remind ourselves as Shabbos is concluding, wow, how amazing is the Shabbos experience that we just had, and we're very sad. We're not going to have it now for the next 6 days, but we're so excited that Shabbos was just with us that we're anticipating a further excitement for Shabbos 6 days from now. That's how much we're going to miss Shabbos. Shabbos just left us. We're sad it left us, but we're excited for Shabbos to come once again in exactly 1 week from now. Therefore, what we ultimately see is that throughout the Purim story, Mordechai and Esther help us understand what was truly important in life, that we realize the true values of what it means to be a Jew, to be able to have this connection with God on Shabbos every single week, to be able to connect on a deep, deep level with our Creator of the world. And so Mordechai and Esther made it their job and their mission to help us stay connected with this understanding that Shabbos was so valuable and to help reignite our passion for this. We therefore begin to see that this deep connection that seems to be a little bit random, right? Esther found Shabbos so important, so she had seven maids, and Vashti made the Jewish women violate Shabbos, and we insert this random verse, quote-unquote, into Havdalah every single week. We begin to see that there's this tapestry that we've weaved throughout our history to help us see the true beauty and connection between Shabbos and Purim, namely that each of them, a deeper understanding of Shabbos can enhance our Purim experience, and a deeper understanding of Purim can enhance our Shabbos experience. With that, I'd like to turn to one or two final sources. Take a look at source number 11. There's a beautiful book that came out, I think, a year or two ago. It's called Purim Eternal by an individual named Avi Feiner. If anyone is familiar with Rabbi Eitan Feiner in the Five Towns in Far Rockaway at the White Shul, so that's his brother. And he writes as follows. I apologize for those of you who have the printed sources. It's a little not as easy to read, but he says as follows. Source number 11. Let's now consider the following phenomenon. When we take a closer look at the actual Havdalah liturgy, we find that it is the soul occurrence in all our prayers in which we recite a verse from Megillas Esther. For the Jews, there was light, gladness, joy, and honor. Why specifically couched in the context of our Havdalah service do we find the lone mention of a verse from the scroll read on Purim? Perhaps, he says, we might suggest the following. Regarding Purim, the light, gladness, joy, and honor, a verse essentially summing up the all-encompassing physical and spiritual exhilaration of the miracles has remained with us throughout time, albeit in varying degrees. There was no Havdalah after Purim, no division after the holiday and its lessons that are to remain with us forever, as will Megillas Esther itself, the scroll from which the above verse is drawn. We'll get back to that in a second. Upon departing from a holy Shabbos, Yom Kippur, and the like, days in which creative labor was forbidden, thus mandating a Havdalah service, we try our utmost to elevate those days as well to the unique status of a Purim. Yes, we must separate the holy from the non-holy, but oh, how we yearn to hold on to the sacred Shabbos, the hallowed day of Yom Kippur, just a little bit longer. Oh, how we wish we could take the lofty level of Yom Kippur with us into the forthcoming days ahead, just like Purim. Specifically, and if you haven't been paying attention yet, pay attention now. Specifically in the context of Havdalah, therefore, do we make mention of the gladness and joy of Purim. What a unique reminder that our Shabbos and Yom Kippur should ideally follow in the footsteps of Purim, that we didn't have to be mavdil from them either. That we didn't have to divorce ourselves from the immense sanctity. Unless we cite the highlights of the Purim salvation as we borrow a verse from the lone scroll that will merit having around forever. Though we must practically be mavdil, we demonstrate that the etzem we don't wish to do so on a theoretical level. We thus also recite the Havdalah over wine, that which gradually diminishes. Okay, whatever. That's a little bit deeper. We're not going to get into that right now. What he is explaining over here is that the reason why we have the verse of La'ihudim Haisa'ura in our Havdalah, why we mention the Megillah in our Havdalah prayer, is specifically because we're meant to link Shabbos and Purim. At the conclusion of Purim, we don't have a Havdalah. It's actually kind of one of the more awkward transitions from a Jewish holiday to the rest of the week, because there is no transition. Once Purim is over, you daven Maariv, and that's that. There's nothing to talk about. Maybe some people are a little bit intoxicated at that point, but other than that, there's no real remnant of Purim left, and you kind of just go on with your day. There is no Havdalah after Purim. After Shabbos, and after virtually every other Jewish holiday, you do have a Havdalah service, and therefore he explains that the reason why we have the Megillah and Purim mentioned at the end of Shabbos is because ideally we hope and pray to not have to separate ourselves from the Kedusha, from the sanctity of Shabbos. We want to keep an element of the Shabbos with us forever, right? That we believe that we have to be working in this world, that we have to work the fields, that we have to do job, we have to make money, we have to support the rest of society and the world, and of course our families, but the sanctity of Shabbos, the beauty of Shabbos, of being able to connect with God on a deeper level, we don't ever really want to be mavdil. We don't want to really ever separate ourselves from that. And if you take a look at our final source, in source number 12, we have the very famous Rambam in his Mishnah Torah in Hilchos Megillas Esther, in which he explains that, we'll say it outside, that very famously all of the books of Tanakh are going to be nullified. When Mashiach comes, when the Messiah comes, that all of the books of Tanakh are going to be sort of nullified, except for the book of Esther. That one book is going to be maintained, and there's also one holiday that will be maintained. All the other holidays will get rid of them, and Purim will be the lasting holiday that will stay with us. And ultimately, we see that Purim has a certain eternality to it, that Purim is meant to last forever because of the deep messages of what it's all about, and that is that we're meant to stay connected to God on an incredibly deep level. That's ultimately the message of Purim. We have some people that just walked in here. I know two listen to the shir, but mostly to Dav Marv, so we're going to wrap up in a second. There's no shir. Nothing's happening. For those of us... let's back up for a second, right? So ultimately we see that Purim is brought back into our minds every single Motzei Shabbos to help us realize that Shabbos needs to have this same idea of Purim. Just like Purim will never be nullified, we'll always have this experience of this day with us, even when the Messiah comes and all the other holidays will be taken away. Shabbos too is going to stay with us when the Messiah comes, because there is an eternality to Shabbos, just like there is an eternality to Purim. Ultimately, we see, to summarize, to help, that we realize that Purim helps us understand what is so special about Shabbos, and Shabbos helps us understand what's so special about Purim. Specifically now, coming back to our original question question of what the reason is of why this verse would end up in our Havdalah. It's because every single Motzei Shabbos, every single Saturday night, as Shabbos concludes, we hope and pray that this Shabbos experience will be just like Purim. Just like Purim, we never differentiate from Purim to the rest of the week. There is no Havdalah. We sort of just continue on from Purim, and we bring the messages and lessons of Purim to the rest of the week. So too, we hope and pray that Shabbos will have that same ability, that we can keep the connection that we built up over Shabbos with God and bring that with us throughout the rest of the week, and it will be able to last us until the next Shabbos, in which we can experience that same connection once again. So I know I'm over time, and we'll begin davening Marv in just a second, but just to Hashem should bless us with this ability to realize that when we get to La Yehudim HaYisa'ora V'Simcha V'Sasun V'Yikar in Havdalah, this Motzei Shabbos, which of course is the most significant one because it is the Shabbos right before Purim, and ultimately when we get to every other Havdalah after every Shabbos throughout the year, to realize that this link between Shabbos and Purim is meant to be an eternal link, that every single Motzei Shabbos, whether it be the ones surrounding Purim, and of course the ones that are nowhere near Purim, 6 months from now, to realize that Shabbos is deeply connected to this holiday, that we're supposed to try and keep Shabbos with us in our hearts and minds, just as we are meant to try and keep Purim in our hearts and minds. I thank all of you for joining me both in person and on Zoom, and I wish everyone a beautiful night. I'm going to run, but thank you all for joining.
Well, thank you very much, Roy Winston, for packing a lot of material into a short amount of time.